Morning.
Being the hour of 9 o'clock, we will call the January 20th, 2021 Board of Directors for the Eastern Municipal Water District meeting together. If you could please stand and join me in saluting our flag, and I'd also like to acknowledge this morning as we wish the new President of the United States well. I pledge allegiance to the flag of the United States of America and to the Republic for which it stands, one nation, under God, indivisible, with liberty and justice for all. Madam Secretary, would you please call the roll, including those on the phone, and make sure our legal counsel is on the
phone?
Sure.
Director Corona?
Here.
Director Slauson?
Here.
Director Armstrong?
Here.
Director Record?
Here.
Legal counsel, are you on the line?
I'm present, thank you.
Very good, thank you so much. April, do we have any people wishing to do public comment at our meeting this morning?
I don't have any requests for public comment. However, we do have Mark Norton with SAPA as a guest in the room and several guests on the phone.
Very good. Welcome very much, everyone. With that, we will go to item two of our agenda, which is our recognitions. Ms. Roundtree, good morning.
Good morning, President Pauley, board and staff. It's so nice to see you all in person. I feel like I haven't seen everyone in months. This morning, we're recognizing Edward Landeros, who is on the line, for his winning participation in the EMWD MSJC Groundwater Reliability Plus Partnership Project. As part of this project, 26 students in MSJC's communication course spent their semester learning about EMWD, Groundwater Reliability Plus, and more specifically, the Purified Water Replenishment Project. Students were tasked with deploying a survey among their peers about purified water reliability, create a fact sheet, a video, and a PowerPoint wrapping up their findings. Out of those 26 students, Edward's submission was chosen as the winner, and his video by far was the best of the bunch. And I'd like to share that video with you this morning.
Dude, are you drinking tap water? Yeah. You know, water that starts as recycled water and then is purified through a multi-stage process of reverse osmosis and microfiltration. And then that water is blended with additional treated water before being purified again through a natural purification process. And then that water is cleaned one more time before being sent out to homes and businesses to ensure that it's safe for drink and use. That water, that's the water you're drinking? Yeah? Cool, can I get a glass?
Sure.
It's not just tap. The Purified Water Replenishment Project is a part of EMWD's Groundwater Reliability Plus initiative, working to provide cleaner and more sustainable water to our community. One of the projects that's a part of this initiative is the Purified Water Replenishment Project. It purifies recycled water through a multi-stage process of microfiltration and reverse osmosis. Continuous testing will ensure the water meets all state and federal drinking water standards. It uses both natural and advanced technological processes, making the water safe and sustainable. Using recycled water drought-proofs our water supply and reduces our reliance on imported water. For more information, visit www.emwd.org/gwr-plus. Now that's clean.
Edward is now a Cal State Fullerton student majoring in communications with a concentration in advertising. Edward, congratulations on your project. If you would like to unmute yourself, I'd invite you to share any comments you might have.
I just want to say thank you, Roxanne. I'm very grateful for the opportunity. Grateful for what Dr. Weber, my teacher, did for me in that class, and I continue to work with her just to perform better in my education and my concentration in advertising. And thank you to all of you at EMWD.
Thank you. We do have a recognition of achievement certificate for you that we'll be sending to you along with a few other items. So again, thank you, Edward.
I think we should also give Edward a hand.
Absolutely.
Well done, Edward.
Thank you very much. That means a lot.
Thank you. That was an extremely creative ad. So I think Edward has quite a future in advertising. With that, we're going to move on to our recognition of our electrical apprentice participants.
Good morning.
Morning.
So after a history of difficulty hiring the caliber of staff to fill control technician positions at the district and to prepare for succession planning due to anticipated retirements in our electrical department, an apprenticeship program was presented to the Board Administrative Committee, and two positions were approved by the Board in the fiscal year 2016-17 budget. The initial program required coordination and partnership with Metropolitan Water District to secure spots for the apprentice in MWD's very well-established instructor-led program held at the Diamond Valley Lake facility. The apprenticeship program requires a 4-year commitment to structured on-the-job training as well as classroom instruction. Throughout the rigorous program, the apprentice successfully demonstrated the ability to meet performance standards and pass proficiency assessments and monitored hands-on experience. At the conclusion of the 4-year program, the apprentice are reclassified to control technicians and are expected to maintain employment with the district for a minimum of 1 year. In May 2019, recognizing a similar succession planning need in the Mechanical Services Department, a second apprenticeship program was approved and implemented. The apprentice in this area began his 4-year program in July of 2019. At the conclusion of the program, the apprentice will be reclassified as a maintenance mechanical technician. Throughout the 4-year program, our two electrical apprentices have been recognized by MWD as being diligent and top performers in the program. At this time, we would like to recognize and acknowledge our appreciation for the support and partnership with MWD, department management who mentored and supported the apprentice throughout the program, and to recognize the accomplishments of our top-performing apprentice. Michael Lynn, reclassified to control technician July 19, 2020, and Gary Gibbons, reclassified to our control technician on January 3, 2021. We have their supervisors here as well. Couldn't have done it without them. Thank you.
I would like to add, this was a great program. To my recollection, Eastern did an electrical apprenticeship program about 32 years ago. And so when HR instituted this program recently, we just kept getting very positive reports from the supervisors as well as from MET. Both these gentlemen finished top of their class, so we're very fortunate to have them now as permanent employees, and I look forward to years of benefit from having them on staff. So,
thank you, Jeff. And again, I'm always proud when Eastern does these programs. I think it's not only beneficial to the agency, but it does a good public service of getting people into the workforce. So thank you very much for that.
And if I could add,
yes, sir.
Also, it's really nice that we have employees that are aggressive and want to participate, mm-hmm. want to improve, and improve themselves, improve their knowledge of especially very technical areas. Thank you.
Absolutely. So congratulations again. With that, before we go on to executive reports, I do want to note that at 10:30 we will go into the Western Riverside Water and Wastewater Financing Authority meeting. So we will have a hard stop or hard break for our meeting at 10:30. Then we will go on to item 3, which is the executive reports and our general manager's report. Mr. Jones.
Thank you, President Pauley, members of the board. Good morning. I do not have a written report today, and I only have one item I'd like to briefly report on. As the board's aware, our South Paris groundwater desalination program has a funding stream that we've established with the U.S. Army Corps of Engineers through their Section 219 Environmental Infrastructure Program. I reported last at our last meeting that we are very fortunate that in the omnibus appropriations and authorizations bills that went through and were signed by the president on December 27th, we were able to increase our authorization from its original $25 million to $50 million. But the other part of the equation is actually getting money out of the program, the appropriations part. And that has been very challenging. We had received to date from the program $21.3 million and have been advocating, working very closely with our congressional delegation, with Congressman Calvert and with Senator Feinstein's office to continue to get money out of that. And have also done a lot of coordination with the Los Angeles District and the South Pacific Division on kind of defining projects under the program that we felt they could fund with very limited appropriations that they have every year. So yesterday, we were very pleased to find out that our remaining appropriated or our remaining amount under our original authorization, $4.753 million, was appropriated, and that the U.S. Army Corps of Engineers issued its work plan, its civil works work plan for 2021, and they have included the project in the work plan. So we will be getting that full funding. It'll allow us to construct some very needed parallel pipeline capacity for the overall Paris-South program. And again, it's another $4.753 million for EMWD. And you know, I want to recognize Jolene Walsh and Joe Mawad. I think we've put a lot of hours in, and it's nice to see this finally come to fruition. So I just wanted to report to the board that we were able to secure that additional funding. Any questions?
No, excellent. Great. Excellent news.
Thank you.
Thank you so much. Laura, anything for us this morning?
Nothing today.
Nick?
I have nothing today. Thank you.
Mr. Mawad?
Good morning, Mr. President, members of the board. Just one quick item. Recently, the Edgemont Community Services submitted a letter to the Riverside County Board of Supervisors advising the Board Supervisors that the elevated groundwater conditions within their service area north of the March Air Reserve Base constitutes a potential risk for their sewer utility system. Based on that information, we've been coordinating with Western Municipal Water District, and we are arranging a meeting with Edgemont to provide them with a detailed presentation on our proposed North Paris groundwater program, which has the long-term benefit of reducing groundwater elevation within the area. So we'll keep you posted as we advance our discussions with Edgemont. That's it.
Thank you very much. Mr. Wall.
Just real briefly, in line with the future agenda item for the board in closed session, we're currently dealing with a PSPS event. It's started last weekend, and yesterday kind of was the culmination of it. We had 28 sites that were disconnected at one point and then power restored to most of those last night. As we speak today, there's 40 sites that are under watch and additional four sites currently are without power. The event's supposed to end by around 10 p.m. this afternoon or this evening, and so far our staff's managing it fine. It has not been any negative impacts to our customers as a result.
Very good. Thank you again. Great job, because I know that's a challenge when the power goes off. So, all right, with that brings us to item four, which is our consent calendar. I understand, Director Corona, you have an item you'd like to remove from your participation.
Yes, item G, I have a conflict on the Woodside with potential litigation with my family, so I would recuse myself on that. Okay. Other than that, I would move that approval of all other items other than item G.
Okay. Before we have a second, any other directors have any other items that they wish to either discuss further or remove from the consent calendar?
I do. I would like to know if we could just talk about item 4D.
4D, okay. Why don't we, anybody else, Director Record, anything on the consent calendar?
No, nothing for me, thanks.
Okay, so we have a... let's make a motion, I understand, for the consent calendar minus item D and item G, correct?
Yes.
And I'd look for a second on that.
Second.
Second by Director Armstrong. Would you please call the roll?
Yes. Director Pauly?
Aye.
Director Corona?
Aye.
Director Slauson?
Aye.
Director Armstrong?
Aye.
Director Record?
Aye.
and it passes on a vote of 5-0. Why don't we then take the item G, if you don't mind? And I will make a note that Director Corona is removing himself from the dais. Do I have a motion and a second on item G? Is that a motion, Director Record?
Sure.
Okay, motion by Director Record.
Second.
Second by Director Armstrong. Would you please call the roll?
Director Pauly?
Aye.
Director Slauson?
Aye.
Director Armstrong?
Aye.
Director Record?
Aye.
That item G passes 4-0 with Director Corona not participating in the vote. With that, Director Corona has returned to the dais. And Director Armstrong, you wanted either a report or discussion on item D, correct?
Yes. Yes. Thank you. I just have a couple questions I wanted to ask.
Sure. Thomas.
So first, this is a resolution of intent to form a CFD. The actual resolution to form it, if I read it right, would be in March, sometime in March. Does the resolution of intent commit you to forming the CFD or not?
Yeah, the resolution of intent basically commits the board to hearing it, you know, later. I think it's scheduled for March, public hearing date, March 3rd. At March 3rd, board meeting, we'll have a public hearing. We'll discuss the item a little bit further, open it up for public comment, hear any, you know, supportive comments or any, you know, any issues or concerns brought by the public. And then at that time, the board will take another vote then.
Okay. Can I ask who the developer of the...
Yeah, the developer is, let's see, I have it here in the, Meritage Homes is expected to develop the property, the project.
Okay, and then the other question I have is, or more of a statement, I noticed that in terms of the number of parcels doesn't really meet the requirements of the land secured financing policy. I read it correctly. I mean, it's very close, but and that really just really leads to my question or request. I mean, I was wondering if it would be possible at some point to bring the land secured financing policy to the board for review and discussion. Just I know there's more CFDs coming this year, it looks like, and so I just would want to know if our request if we could do that to review those before some of the other CFDs come.
Yeah, we have a few other updates to make to the policy. The policy was last updated in 2017, so definitely, you know, time for a review and an update. We have some plans to update it, and we can bring it, you know, to the board for consideration, also to discuss and then look at some of the underlying guidelines in that policy. The policy prior to being updated in 2017 was a much older policy. And in 2017, we really revised it, revamped it, and made it more robust in terms of protecting the district and you know, setting expectations and guidelines. Okay. If I could just touch on quickly on the number of lots for this one. You know, as you mentioned, it's very close, and we look at other criteria other than just the number of lots. And we certainly wouldn't bring it forward to the board for consideration if it didn't, if it wasn't a healthy project and you know, met all our other guidelines. But yeah, happy to bring the policy back for discussion and for review and to add the revisions.
Okay, thank you,
Director Armstrong. So just to clarify. So we'll bring the policy back as an information item to get any feedback from the board, and we can provide you that policy in advance so you have an opportunity, the existing policy, to review it. And to Thomas's point, when the way the policy is there are guidelines that are sent out. So, yes, you know, we'll look at the number of units as one of the many guidelines, but, you know, you look at value to lien and a number of other criteria, and if some of those other criteria are so overwhelmingly strong, you know, we make the determination or the recommendation to the board that we should still go forward. So, again, we'll go over that, but we will get that to you in advance, and we'll put it on as an information item.
Okay, thanks. I appreciate what you're saying, too. I understand there's a lot that goes into it.
Yeah, I think, Paul, when that was approved in 2017, wasn't there a lot of discussion about precisely that we wanted to give staff some flexibility because a subdivision in Moreno Valley compared to one in someplace else might be totally different in terms of the financing?
That's correct.
Okay.
Yeah, and Director Slauson, prior to 2017, we had a different chart that showed the number of units and kind of a heat map, if you will, of the health of a CFD. We had that in a written policy prior. In 2017, after discussion with the board, they decided to take it out of the publicized policy, like you mentioned, to give staff the flexibility to take the whole health of the CFD in consideration rather than just, you know, one or two items.
Okay. All right. Thanks.
I would move the item.
All right. Any other discussion or questions by the board members? Seeing none, I have a motion by Director Armstrong, a second by Director Crona. Would you please call the roll?
Dr. Pauly?
Aye.
Dr. Crona?
Aye.
Dr. Slauson?
Aye.
Dr. Armstrong?
Aye.
Director Record?
Aye.
And item G passes on a vote of 5-0. D. Thank you. That will bring us to our action calendar, item 5, and our first is a board action regarding fiscal year 2021 approved water and sewer rates. Mr. Jones.
Thank you. Good morning again, President Pauly, members of the board. This item today is to seek the board's action regarding the fiscal year 2021 adopted water and sewer rates. So let me go through this. This is included in your board package, and just a little background of kind of the purpose of this item, why we're bringing it to the board today, and the previous discussion of the board. Also, in our last discussion, the board asked for some specific information, and we have that information summarized here. Hopefully answer those questions, and then to go over some recommendations and options for the board to choose to move forward. So a little bit on the background, very quickly, December 16th, this item came up, and Directors Armstrong and Crona asked for the board to have a discussion. That was concurred, the board concurred to that, and it was on the improved water and sewer rates that would go into effect January 1st. And on January 6th, we did bring that item forward to the board as an information item and provided a presentation and an overview of the budget, the rate-setting process, the comparisons with other agencies, some of the legislative, financial, and other considerations. It was a very good discussion. We appreciated the ability to really understand that and walk through and understand the board's concerns. And so we were directed out of that to bring an action item back to the board for consideration. And that action item would provide an option either for the board to continue to go forward with the already approved January 1st, 2021 rate increase or potentially consider rescinding or deferring that rate increase for 6 months. So going very quickly to the board requested additional information, there was three things that we heard that the board requested information on. Director Pauly, specifically, you requested information, kind of more detail and really the specific steps we've taken to reach out to customers who are in our past due aging category, and also kind of what those future communications are going to look like and so forth. Another question raised by you, Director Armstrong, was, if 6 months, what's the expected revenue? Is it $4.2 million? And so we have some additional information on that I'd like to share, kind of show where that number was derived from. And then Director Pauly also asked, you know, kind of the process and procedures for adjusting customer bills to rescind the 2021 rates. So let's go to the first item. Again, as we presented last time, the board's taken, I think, very substantive actions to date to focus on COVID-19 relief for customers. And I think that's really been our effort here. And I think that's been the genesis of this discussion is, you know, what are the impacts on customers of COVID-19 and what programs do we have in place and how we can help those customers out. You know, many of those customers have fairly, that are in the 61 plus day aging category with, you know, water bills that can, you know, water and sewer together can be $80, $100 a month. You know, they're looking at a couple hundred dollars plus that they are behind on bills. And actually, very interestingly, there was an article in the Sacramento Bee yesterday that we will send you the link for that talked about this as a statewide issue and the fact that the state board's estimating there's $1 billion in customer delinquencies that are out there. And it was some interesting discussion on how that might be worked out. But we have four main programs, that really address this. The Help to Others program, this is the partnership with United Way, very significant $100 one-time bill credit for customers who qualify. Second, the board did take action to waive late fees and to also do that retroactively for customers that had been past due since last April. Again, that's a $25 a month. And again, when you have customers that are 6 months late, that can be very significant. The interest-free payment plans, we're very flexible on those payment plans and have offered those to customers. And we really want to engage those customers and get them on the payment plans. And again, by having an interest-free payment plan, we feel that's a very effective way to engage. Also, the Riverside County Community Action Partnership, and here's where we see some potential in the future. They are still administering the CARES Act funding from the March 2020 federal COVID relief legislation. That's $3 million has been set aside for Riverside County in this program. And we've worked out with them to a program where customers can go directly to the Community Action Partnership, be directed there, and have their entire outstanding balance paid down if they qualify from an income standpoint, and that payment's made directly to EMWD. So we're working closely with our customers to get them pushed in that direction. I think also, obviously, we're very pleased to see the federal government in their actions to provide some funding on this. December 27th, the president signed the COVID relief as part of the overall omnibus appropriations package, and to provide $25 billion with rental assistance, also helps with utility bills, and $638 million for grants for customer non-payment to water and wastewater agencies. Those programs have not been rolled out yet, and we still need to look towards and use our federal and local advocacy to try to get some of that money directed to our customers. So on the specific outreach, Director Pauly, this goes to your question. I want to provide some metrics on this. We did a very significant direct mail campaign to those 61-plus day aging customers with all these options and did that in December of 2020. We also did email blasts to 2,750 approximately customers. That was also sent on December 30th. We did kind of a follow-up with about 1,900 of those on January 4th. We saw about a 35% open rate, which is pretty good, and about a 19% click-through rate. So hopefully that got the message out to some of those customers. Bill messaging, we did a special bill messaging that was added to the late fee credit bills, those bills that are late in December 2020, really trying to, again, call attention to the programs that we have, and a bill message added to all those bills in January 2021. Social media posts were done the weeks of December 14th, 28th, and January 4th. And, of course, you know, where we're finding a really great way to communicate now is on some of the social media platforms, particularly and kind of impressively the Facebook and Nextdoor, where we're really building up our accounts and with community groups. And we've done that in Moreno Valley, Paris, in the Hemet, San Jacinto area, where we have the higher level of delinquencies. Also on the websites, we've looked and set up specific sites on payment. on assistance programs for that, and then done a lot of community presentations and really reaching out to the community and the chambers and letting people know we do have these plans and options available to help customers at this time, and updated our overall flyer. We're here to help flyer, which we use to pass out and distribute as much as we possibly can. So that's historically. Prospectively, what we have is some additional website add-ons that are really focused just on payment assistance. So these would go, when you pull up our website, there'd be a very specific add-ons where you could click through very quickly on our banner, on our have pop-up messaging as you go onto our site, and also our My Account, emwd.home. Homepage banner on that, when you go to your account specifically, our customers go, again, another pop-up with messaging on the outreach programs and customer assistance programs. We're going to do another round of the direct mail letters. And again, this is targeted at those customers that are 61-plus day aging. So we're doing a targeted, focused mailing to those customers. We're scheduled to do that. And, in fact, it's being implemented this week, as I understand, April. And so we'll get that out. And we're going to do a complimentary round two blast of emails for February. We also found the ability to do some additional advertising in Hemet San Jacinto Chambers, the chat newsletter, which gets a lot of traffic. And, of course, we'll continue with the social media Facebook on the community groups pages. So any questions on the outreach activities, or I can continue through?
No, it sounds very extensive.
So the second question, and Director Armstrong, you asked this, is what's the revenue projections that we do see, water sales, and they vary a little bit, and sewer, of course, which tends to be flatter throughout the thing. But what this chart shows is based on, again, historic revenue projections from previous years and what our sales are and what our sales patterns are, what the anticipated revenue would be by month from January 2021 to June 2021. And again, these are based on information gathered from previous years that were used to put these budget forecasts together. And although there is some variation, it doesn't vary a tremendous amount. If you go through January, February, March, April, May, and June, what we anticipate that, again, the revenue impact of rescinding the sewer and the water rate increase would be anticipated to be $4.2 million. And that's where we derived that number. So we wanted to be very clear on that. If you look at the overall revenue impact, bear in mind we did waive those late fees. That was about a $3.8 million impact. And so overall, we're looking at around $8 million. That would be from the waiver of the late fees, which was budgeted. We budget revenue from the late fees, as well as the $4.2 million from the revenue reduction from the rescinding or potentially rescinding the rates. Again, what we do, and as you know our budget very well, we have revenues, expenses. We use the net revenues, or what we call the margin, and we apply that to our capital improvement program primarily and our capital projects. We have a very robust capital improvement program, but we've also historically used it to fund unfunded liabilities for pension, OPEB, avoiding future rate increases. So, and I will come back to that at the end of the presentation. I also want to talk about the process, and this was another question asked, to say, okay, we've got the rate increase in place. What is it going to take to unwind that, and what would we be looking at? There's three areas where this would affect: information services, customer service, and public and governmental affairs. We asked each of the departments to give an estimate of the time it would take to go ahead and make these changes. It would, again, on information services, bear in mind we have a proprietary, highly customized and billing system. That's why we're doing our CIS project, so these changes are less time intensive in the future. But there's code changes review. We look at the test rates. We validate that. And so there's an IS role in there. Also, then customer service needs to take that. They also propose, and we have, when we do these changes, we have the IS department put them together, but then we have the customer service department also test them, so we get a validation that the changes are effective. And they would have, obviously a number of questions. Anytime you make changes, you get questions. And then the coordination with the other agencies who we bill as well. And then public and government affairs, there would be some bill messaging. So we estimate about 320 hours of staff time. I do want to emphasize this isn't a direct expense. And so we're not saying there's a cost of 320 hours or we put a dollar number on that. Staff is paid to be here. They're working, and they would just be redirecting about 320 hours of their time towards these efforts and away from other projects. So recommendations, first before we get in this, just a kind of a quick summary. I want the board to be very clear that from a staff's perspective, we are absolutely committed to helping our customers that need assistance through COVID-19. And I think we've brought forward some programs that are very targeted and very targeted on those customers that need help and on that kind of 20% of our customers that really need the help. The projected loss of the $8 million, the 4.2 plus from the rate increase and the late fee of 3.8 is significant. And as we went through last time, and we won't spend time on this today, we believe there's significant political, financial uncertainties associated when and if and how the governor lifts the executive order and where customers right now do not have to pay their bills, and then how the legislature may require that we resolve customer debt. And so, again, in being prudent and, staff's position is that, we really think it's important to keep moving forward with the rate increase and really focus on these targeted programs. And so we have two options for the board. Option one is to retain the rate increase, and as we mentioned last time, we really need to take a targeted look as we come up with fiscal year 21-22 and 22-23 budget process, which is around the corner, in looking at the rates, and we'll be happy to do that. And then, of course, continue to invest and have the active deployment on the board-approved focus customer service and the rate relief programs. Option two is to rescind the January 1st, 2021 water and sewer rate increase and defer that until July 1st, 2021. We have two resolutions. We have actually a resolution amending the consolidated schedule of rates and charges. That's included in your package, and that would effectuate that rate deferral. And what staff would propose accommodating this is by reducing contributions to the capital project construction fund. That would offset the rate reduction. It would then require that potentially we bond finance more of those projects in the future, or that in future years we increase the rates a little bit more to make up for that revenue. So there are ways to do this, and we want to be very clear. If we're directed by the board, we can find ways to accommodate this, but it does have other implications. But that we think this would be the best way if the board moved in that direction. And then obviously under option two, we want to still implement option two, or items two and three under the previous option. We need to review the rates again through the budget process, and we need to very consistently pursue the deployment of the customer assistance and the rate relief programs. So with that, I open it up for the board's discussion. And our staff recommendation, as I mentioned, is option one. I'd be happy to answer any questions or just allow the board to have discussion at this point.
I have a quick question as to the two options.
Sure.
Isn't option one kind of moot? I mean, if why is that even a choice? Because it is. I mean, it's there now. I mean, it's option one is there now. So wouldn't we just be looking at two, whether it's a yes or a no on option two, instead of even option one?
I mean, the board talked about having a reconsideration of this, and so we put it in terms of options. Okay. But I think, that was just the way we structured it, okay. So Director Corona. But your point is well taken.
Option one could just as well say take no action.
Option one, yeah. Correct.
Okay. You talked about the...
But I do want to point out, we did, again, previously when we recommended this, did talk about reviewing through the biennial budget process, and did and so the board can also, through this option, provide that specific direction as well as the continued deployment of the programs, which we would do anyway. But to your point's well taken, Director Corona.
When you talked about the outreach for those that are struggling to make their payments or 61 days behind, the call center also, the employees there, are instructed to advise them on how to seek out?
Absolutely. We have very well-developed scripts for the call center. If a customer calls, particularly a customer we're happy if they're a 61-plus day aging customer that calls, and we immediately go to, you know, your account's overdue, but we have a lot of programs available to you right now. And that's kind of been our top-line communication with the customers, and they've been scripted to do so. The customer service representatives.
From my perspective, I'd be loath to reduce our rates to benefit those that are not struggling. I mean, let's face it, there are a lot of government employees, a lot of construction that are going gangbusters, are making a lot of money. A lot of them are working overtime, and for them to get, like, it's like with the federal funds that we've gotten, for them to get checks for $1,400 or $2,000, it's just, to me, it just seems incorrect. It's not the way to focus our funds. Those that can pay, those that can easily pay, I don't see why they would be getting, why we'd be helping the wealthiest. It just makes no sense to me. But those that are struggling, I think we're doing a great job and trying to reach out to them and give them avenues to help them pay their payments and even waiving the late fee that they would normally be paying in years past. So I'm still with option one.
President Pauley.
Well, I think Director Armstrong wants to speak. Go ahead, Director Armstrong.
Okay. Well, I am...
Director Record.
Yeah, no, I appreciate the report and all the information, and I concur completely with staff's efforts to maintain the fiscal health of the district, and I think that's important. And but at the same time, what I think is really important, too, for the community is trying to help... prevent people getting into this situation where we've got to have help with these other programs. And I think there's people on the margin, there's businesses on the margin, and it's maybe they're doing okay today, but, you know, we're in the thick of it right now. You know, maybe these little bits are the things that push them over the edge, too. And I think this is a fair option, too, is fair and equitable to all customers, not just one group, but to every customer. Those that are struggling, those that aren't struggling. And I think the district has the wherewithal and ability to do this. It's not a rescinding the rate completely, but just deferring that until July 1st. So we're not going to get into not having rate increases recurring on a consistent basis and falling behind. So I still think that this is the right thing to do, and still think option two is the right way to go.
Director Record.
Thank you, Mr. President. I think it's always very important to look at our rate structure. That's the most important thing we do, and we want to make sure that we're serving our community in the appropriate way. Are you hearing me okay?
Yes.
Yes.
Okay. I agree with Director Slauson. I think that we have implemented a number of ways to help the people that are having the most trouble paying their bills, and I think that's appropriate. And we can't single out a certain portion of our ratepayers and say, you're going to pay less. It's illegal for us to do that. So I think what we've done is the right thing, and I've talked to a number of my constituents who believe that we all need to try to help people, you know, good times and bad. But that staying staying the course and having moderate rate increases consistently to avoid the big jumps is important. So I support that we take no action to rescind the rate, and I would ask staff to not only continue the outreach on the programs that we have in place to help people that are having trouble paying their bills, but to also do outreach on programs that we have for conservation so that you can lower your water usage and that will lower your bill. So this is a decision that I spent a lot of time thinking about, and I think it's appropriate to stay the course at this point.
All right. Thank you, Director Record. I'd just like to chime in. First of all, I'd appreciate Director Armstrong bringing this issue up to the board in general. I think it was a very good discussion to have. We, the last year during COVID, have had a lot of unusual circumstances, not only at Eastern, but in society in general. So I think it's healthy to have these discussions. However, I also believe that, you know, we have put a lot of effort into rate assistance. I believe the federal government is about to ship another $1,400 to certain individuals in our society, and I hope those people use some of that money to not only pay their water bill, but if they're behind, help get current on their water bill. I understand that's what some of that money is coming for during these times. I also believe that once the board takes an action on something, we should fulfill that action. But given that, we also have another opportunity coming up in the near future to review the next 2 years' budgets and set other rates. And I look forward to that discussion. I look forward to all the directors being involved with that and bringing their ideas forward. So I at this time would be hesitant to delay the rate increase. With that, if there's not further discussion, I would entertain a motion on either options one or two.
I'll make a motion for option two.
Second.
Okay, so we have, just for the record, we have Director Armstrong making a motion to approve option two, Director Corona making the second on that. Madam Clerk, would you call the roll, please?
Director Pauly?
No.
Director Corona?
Yes.
Director Slauson?
No.
Director Armstrong?
Yes.
Director Record?
No.
With that, the motion fails on a vote of 3-2. Thank you again on staff on that. With that, we will move on to item B, which is to adopt the 2021 state and federal legislative priorities, policies, and principles. Danielle, are you going to present this?
And is we Ms. have Walsh the, on the phone? Governmental and Governmental Affairs A-Team with us
okay.
today, Danielle
right.
Coates, and I believe Jolene is also in the building virtually.
Okay.
Correct.
Okay. Ha. Ms. Walsh.
And you could hear her there.
Good morning, President Pauly and members of the board. Before you for consideration today is our proposed 2021 legislative priorities and policy principles. We've been adopting these and updating them since about 2004. And after nearly two decades, these documents have become a bit of a patchwork. So this year, Danielle started from scratch. We rewrote these documents and consolidated the state and the federal to reduce redundancies. And Danielle is before you today to present. Thank you.
Good morning, President Pauly, members of the board. It's my pleasure to speak to our policy principles and our legislative priorities. As Jolene indicated, for this presentation, I'm going to speak to our overall legislative process as far as it pertains to this complete update. And then I'm also going to take the opportunity to speak to our legislative priorities and our policy principles and then touch briefly on some state and federal legislation that we're proactively working on. So digging in on our legislative process overview, both our legislative priorities and our policy principles, as Jolene indicated, have historically been updated annually. However, both documents were getting a little tired and, as Jolene indicated, sort of a patchwork in nature. So we decided to take a wholesale look at both documents and completely revise them. Eastern being the proactive agency that it is, we also like to think that our legislative program is equally as proactive as the agency as a whole. So we needed to really bring these core policy documents up to date and speak to a broader range of policy initiatives that we hope to address in the future. We discussed ways we could really elevate the district, and in doing so, we met with leaders and experts throughout the district, district leadership, and really identified what issues were on the horizon, how the district could position itself a little bit differently and a little more proactively, and how these core documents can really reflect this work. So the resulting documents are designed to complement each other and to serve as advocacy pieces upon adoption by the board. So as far as the strategic approach, we've outlined the documents. The legislative priorities will be completely rewritten every 2 years with an annual update, so that way they really stay fresh at the start of the two-year legislative session. The documents are the policy principle or legislative priorities, pardon me, are intended to be a little bit more dynamic in nature and really speak to the legislative issues as well as legislation that we see on the immediate horizon. So our policy principles are more static in nature. They look at a longer-term horizon of about 5 years. So under this new approach, we're really going to take a wholesale update every 5 years, preserve that annual update to make sure the documents are still really fresh and really articulate what we're trying to achieve for the policy objectives of the district. As Jolene indicated, historically, our policy principles and our legislative priorities, or at least our policy principles, have been updated on an as-needed basis. But we really needed to bring the whole document together to reflect more than just our strategic documents, but to really speak to the breadth of services that the district delivers. And given that 2020 is behind us, we're starting with a new legislative session. We have new leadership at the federal government, and there's a lot of shift within the state administration. It really felt time to take this proactive step and really update all of our policy goals and objectives. So diving in a little deeper, I'm going to still keep this pretty high level, but if there's any questions on either the legislative priorities or the policy principles, please either stop me or feel free to ask me at the end of the presentation. I'd be happy to speak to any particular issues or concerns. So they've been the policy priorities have been broken down into three sections: pressing issues, initiatives, and ongoing issues. And I will speak to those differences right now. The COVID-19, clearly we see this as more of a pressing issue. It's more immediate. Hopefully we won't be speaking about the impacts of COVID on the district and on the broader community as a whole 5 years from now. So we really want to seek an end date to the water system shutoff or non-payment moratorium that the governor issued. As Paul articulated, that's had some unanticipated hardships on both water providers as well as ratepayers. We've looked at, and we are already currently proactively looking at external funding for ratepayers as well as for the district to offset the non-payment. And then we're also looking at opportunities to use our wastewater system to identify hotspots for COVID. As Jeff Wall spoke to earlier, wildfire and PSPS issues are not going anywhere anytime soon. We are going to continue to see PSPSs utilized going into the future. So we're going to speak to the legislature about really narrowing down and in advancing an additional notification procedure that allows us to receive notification earlier, see what we can do to limit both the scope and the scale of the PSPS as well as the duration of these events. Clearly, funding is going to be part of the overall picture, so we're going to advocate for funding for both the purchase of backup power generation as well as any opportunities to reimburse staff time. We're going to speak to the legislature about really integrating a state and local response to make sure that is consistent and that we can react and reflect on these issues accordingly. And moving on to water quality issues, speaking to our experts throughout the district, PFAS really was elevated as one of the areas of our highest concern because it really bleeds into a variety of the district's core services. So we're going to speak to the opportunities for funding to address PFAS, as well as pursuing opportunities for polluters pays. We already have seen lawsuits elsewhere to really go after those that have contributed PFAS to the wastewater and water streams. We're going to require and ask for legislation, regulation to be based on realistic scientific data instead of legislation. We really saw the hardship and the struggles with that with the passage of AB 756 a couple of years ago that really took some steps to address PFAS that didn't really regard the science. So that underscores the importance of really utilizing scientific data to establish core regulations. And then we're going to continue our advocacy work to seek funding to address septic to sewer conversations or conversions. On the initiative side, clearly safe and affordable drinking water has been a huge priority for the district. We've spent extensive amounts of time engaged in these conversations. These are really important conversations to be part of right now in the SB 200 conversations. There's already been talk of expanding the goals and objectives of SB 200 beyond what was in the core legislation. And with those expanded goals and objectives, it will increase the cost for implementing this initiative. And, of course, with that increased cost, there will be a need for an additional funding stream. So we've been really proactive about ensuring that the legislature and the state board adheres to the really firm outlined goals and objectives that were included in SB 200. So, and then clearly, LIRA is going to be a very important part of the conversations going into the next year. We've already seen conversations at both the state board as well as within the legislature. As recently as Friday, Senator Dodd introduced SB 222, which speaks to low-income rate assistance programs, but it doesn't identify a funding source. So this will allow us to be really proactive in those conversations as well. Climate change and water resilience. Climate change is a huge priority for the Newsom administration. We saw at the tail end of last session the executive orders issued by the governor on 30 by 30-30 for the voluntary conservation of 30% of the state's land and oceans. That will also impact some of the efforts that water providers have underway. So we're going to be keeping close contact and close oversight of those initiatives, as well as the governor's zero emission vehicle initiative. So we will also, on the local and imported water supplies, we will continue our strong advocacy and strong support of Delta Conveyance, while also at the same time really looking to bolster and support the development of local water supplies, preserving and protecting our existing infrastructure, and seeing what we can do to ensure that we continue to have the opportunities to advance a resilient water supply portfolio. On ongoing operations, governance, and administrations, we have been very active on a number of fronts, especially with Cortese Knotts Hertzberg, working with LAFCO and a consortium of local government associations and agencies to look at protest provisions as it relates to failing and struggling special districts. That was an effort that the Little Hoover Commission really asked for the local government to take a look at. So we've been very active on that front. There's an opportunity for consensus-based legislation. We'd like to at least be able to continue to participate in those dialogues. We anticipate, again, looking at LIRA potentially as it pertains to Proposition 218. We want to effectively engage on those conversations. And then following the use of virtual platforms in the past year for the way we conduct public business, there's opportunities and efforts underway to extend those efforts permanently or even on an emergency basis. On the renewable energy and the energy front, clearly securing funding to advance renewable energy and zero-emission vehicle opportunities, as well as the related infrastructure, are going to be important to the district as everyone moves forward with meeting the objectives of the Newsom administration. So for our policy principles update, I'm going to go through this one a little quicker. When meeting with all of our experts, there were about four overarching policies that really emerged from these conversations. And instead of bleeding these through the document, we thought it was really more important to elevate these into sort of its own area so we can continue to advocate more strongly and more proactively on these fronts. So first of all, there's local control. Of course, there's the interest in preserving and protecting our ability to pursue local control in responding to mandates and initiatives. Understanding and complementing regional diversity. We saw a lot of need for this through the water conservation conversations. And then funding. Eastern, clearly, as was heard earlier, is very successful in pursuing external funding. But as the state and federal governments continue to include mandates, we also need to ensure that there's funding that goes along with these opportunities. Technology, we heard often in our conversation that there's interest in pursuing technology, but it has to be approved technology, technology that is reliable, instead of ensuring that the state and federal governments want us to advance technology that is unproven. So that one, we have a very careful way of communicating our technology needs. The rest of the policy principles is broken down into four major policy oversight areas of, four major oversight policy areas with 12 subcategories. And so, for instance, under water system operations, the subcategories are governance, administration, technology, and security. With each overarching policy objective, there's a policy goal that's been outlined in the document, which outlines precisely how we anticipate in incorporating those sub-bullets into pursuing that overarching goal. Our general obligation bond funding policy principle has popped in and out of our policy principle work over the years. However, as conversations continue to be elevated at both the state and federal levels, we felt it was really important just to have more of a concrete way that we speak to our general obligation bond funding, specific asks that we will generally be asking for all the time. Then, of course, clear we speak and enhance on our local and imported water supply opportunities. And then there's more language on our policy principles for climate change resilience and regulatory compliance. So that's our policy principles. We will continue this year to work on our co-sponsored legislation with California Municipal Utilities Association. This is our fourth year in this effort. We thought last year was going to be the last year, but we did have interest by decision makers to continue to pursue this effort. It's really began to resonate over the years. We've been really proactive in reaching out to LAFCO, which had some significant concerns at the tail end of last session, and we think we have been able to possibly thread that needle and come to a consensus on a good product with LAFCO involvement. We plan to put in language into Ledge Council this Friday, which will then be put into print next month. Okay, I'm going to go ahead and pass it back over to Jolene, and she's going to speak to our proposed federal legislation.
All right. Thank you, Danielle. The federal legislative proposal would establish a future for the Title 16 program for both the authorized project component of the program as well as the WIN Title 16, which is the competitive grant element of the program. In terms of the legacy programs, none of them, there have been no new authorized programs since 2009, and the WIN competitive program expires at the end of 2021. So the status is there are only about seven legacy projects still competing for funding. There are still 16 on the books, but only seven are active. And Congress has been over-appropriating funds for that component of the program to the tune of about $20 million extra each year, and that's happened for three consecutive years. So the Bureau of Reclamation has about $60 million of money sitting there unspent, whereas the competitive program has about 60 projects that are ready for funding, and they're grossly underfunded every year. So we believe this proposal would address that. The legislative language has been drafted with the help of Congressman Calvert's office and his staff. Water Reuse Association is the natural sponsor, and they have agreed to sponsor it pending membership input. And once the membership input is complete, we would be working with some author's office to try to find the most appropriate vehicle for this proposal. And we're actually starting now to reach out to other associations and other entities to start building support and coalitions for this proposal. And that concludes the presentation, unless there are any questions.
Thank you. Are there any questions from the board? Mr. Armstrong, Director Armstrong.
Yeah, I just wanted to first just compliment the A-team here and the whole team here at Eastern. I think you guys have done a fantastic job in the past, and the results speak to that. I thought this report was really very comprehensive and understandable, and thought the way you laid it out and was really well done. I did just have a couple questions.
Absolutely.
Okay. On the, I guess it's maybe it's under the COVID, and some of it just really kind of maybe goes back to what the general manager spoke about earlier, about concerns about, you know, who's going to be left holding the bag and funding some of these delinquencies, et cetera. Is there any effort to, I guess, more or less protect the measures, the means that agencies have to collect debt going forward into the future? Would we lose some of those, like your ability to lien properties? I think that should be something that we're looking at too, is just trying to make sure we're protecting reasonable measures to collect in the future. I don't know if you brought up the concern about it, so I just thought maybe that's something we might want to be focused on.
Absolutely. That is definitely an area that it's not spelled out here. And we could absolutely elaborate, but it's something that we're part of a regional coalition that has put together some specific asks of the legislature, and that's part of the asks that we're looking at, being able to preserve and protect our existing authority. However, that is absolutely, especially as the liens and other abilities are absolutely on the radar of the state board, as we heard and was evidenced by conversations by Director our board member, Laurel Firestone, so it's very wise and prudent to be concerned about that opportunity.
Okay. Yeah, and I think to complement that, and as part of this coalition we've been working with, and within that is also the ability to not have the board dictate, for example, how we structure a payment program, that we need to have that flexibility. So there's a local control element to it, as well as preserving the tools. So it's a very good point, Director Armstrong.
Okay. And then I just would mention the participation in the continued voluntary use of virtual meetings in that platform. Do we support the continued use or not support it? Or
right now we're sort of in an agnostic position. There's two bills that are already being proposed, one by I believe it's Aqua, and the other one by Three Valleys Municipal Water District. Maybe not Aqua. It's Three Valleys and Aqua, and then also CSDA. One of them would make it an allowable use of this technology on a voluntary basis by the district. The other one would look to only allow the use of virtual technology during a governor-declared emergency. So it's not necessarily that we want to support either initiative, but just have the opportunity to engage in those conversations, recognizing they're already ongoing.
Okay. And then my last question, I think goes to your slide on the small system water, that item.
Yeah.
I'm just curious, I didn't say it right.
Small System Water Authority Act.
Yeah, that act. I'm just curious, what is Eastern's impact to Eastern on that act? Is there a direct impact to us? Are there systems that might be on our fringe or something that we might have to get involved helping to solve a problem? Or is this just a broader issue that we're participating in?
Sure. I'll start, and okay. Dania, you can finish. I think it is a broader interest of the water industry, but I think it does have an indirect impact on us, and let me get into that in a moment. First, there are no agencies locally. There's no situation within our service area immediately adjacent that we think the Small System Water Authority Act would be applicable to. But if you look at the 320-plus failing systems, there are very significant applications throughout other portions of the state. One of the things we're very concerned about is under SB 200 and under the State Water Resources Control Board charge to address these failing water systems is they don't, and from our view, have the tools necessary to address those systems. They can, take one of these systems. Sometimes they have under 100 service connections, try to bring them in compliance by throwing money at them. We don't necessarily think that's always effective. They have the ability to consolidate them with another adjacent system, but there isn't always a host system there that they can consolidate this. So this actually provides the state board a third lane. And not only does it fit, we think, in many situations throughout the state, but then will result, and this is where it has an impact on us, on very efficient deployment of that $130 million a year the state board has. What we're concerned about is that they are, without this type of tool, they are going to basically run into substantial budgetary crunches, and they are then going to turn back to the water community and say, hey, maybe we need to have a water tax or a public goods charge to kind of ramp up. So it's really, I think, from us, the ability to kind of reform the way the model service model is put together, really address some of these systems that probably shouldn't and don't have the capability to be in existence, and do it in a way where the state board isn't coming back to the water community and asking for more money. Okay. Danielle, do you want
to? Yeah, I'd put a few more numbers to that. The state board has identified 300 failing water systems, another 400 plus that they've identified as at risk. They have the tools that they have at their disposal. There's no way that they can address these 739 systems based off of individual consolidations or even applying the resources. So this wasn't even a tool that was not necessarily on their radar. So based on our experience bringing this forward, it's really started to resonate. So that's really just because of our collective experience with the work that we've already done on consolidations, what our interest and involvement is in this conversation.
Thank you.
Yeah. Any other questions?
Any other questions from the board? Director Record, do you have anything?
All right, with that, we've
done. I had one for Jolene, if that's possible.
Oh, absolutely. Jolene?
Jolene, are you there?
Sure.
Very good. We are about, looks like, an hour and 10 minutes into the Biden administration. I probably am going to guess that there's going to be some more environmental regulations, Waters of the U.S. regulations coming our way that may affect our ability to do business that we have to pass on to our ratepayers. Is part of our priorities to make sure that we stay within reasonableness for local water agencies such as us at the federal level on these areas?
Yes, absolutely. So you're correct about that. The Waters of the U.S. will be something we have our eye on. We're also seeing that the Biden administration has a very aggressive perspective on regulating PFAS and making PFAS a CERCLA-regulated chemical. So there are a number of areas. Endangered Species Act would be one of them. There are a number of areas where I think we're going to be playing defense. Now that the outcome of the Senate has been determined, Biden will also have the use of the Congressional Review Act, which will allow him to roll back many of the regulations that he disagreed with from the Trump administration with greater ease than he could have absent the
the vote that he now has in the Senate. So we'll be watching all of the opportunities that he has to do things that could be detrimental to us. We've already been working with our associations to kind of identify everything that can be rolled back with the Congressional Review Act and that could be changed otherwise, and we'll be actively advocating on those.
All right. Thank you very much for that. If there are no further questions or comments, I will go ahead and move item B to adopt the 2021 state and federal legislative priorities and policy principles.
Second.
Director Armstrong seconded the item. May I have a roll call, please?
Director Pauley?
Aye.
Director Crona?
Aye.
Director Slauson?
Aye.
Director Armstrong?
Aye.
Director Record?
Director Record?
Aye.
All right. With that, we will. That passes 5-0.
Thank you.
Before we move on to item C, Thomas, are you going to do item C?
Yes.
Do you think we can do that within 5 to 7 minutes?
You know what's funny, Director Pauley?
Tell me what's funny,
Thomas. It's already funny.
Yeah, the next item is the same presentation. So it depends on if you want to take a break and then hear back-to-back.
We're going to hit our 10:30. If you think you can do it in the next 5 to 7 minutes,
okay.
Why don't we
yeah,
go forward
sign me up.
With it? Okay? All right. The floor is yours, sir.
You can do it.
Morning, President Pauley, members of the board. Very excited for this opportunity. I don't want the rushed item to take away from my excitement, so I'll try to make it interesting. This has to do with the opportunity to refund a pool of bonds that have been issued in the last 10 years or so. Tax-exempt yields continue to trend near historic lows. We saw them hit all-time lows in the summer, and they continue to be very low. As I mentioned, we identified an opportunity just through our normal proactive review of our land-secured program, looking at previously issued bonds and just our bond portfolio in general. This opportunity basically is a great opportunity to save property owners a considerable amount of money, which I'll highlight in a few slides. And as I mentioned, the bonds that we've identified eligible to be refunded were issued between 2013 and 2018. I put together a brief map to show a general overview of where these developments are located. As you can see, they're spread out all across our service area and affect several communities all across the area. The Marks-Ruse Local Bond Pooling Act of 1985 authorized local municipalities to work together through entering into a joint powers agreement to issue a larger series of bonds to fund several smaller projects. In 2004, Eastern and Rancho entered into a JPA to form the Western Riverside Water and Wastewater Financing Authority. Now, the authority board is represented by 2 members from Eastern and 2 members from Rancho. Currently, Directors Corona and Slauson represent Eastern, and Directors Plummer and Wilson represent Rancho. After the break, we'll have the authority meeting, and same item will be presented to the authority. Since the formation of the authority has issued 10 different series of bonds, both new issue and refunding bonds. The last issue was in 2017. The district plans to utilize the authority as a conduit to issue these bonds. The series of bonds are broken into 2 series, Series A1 and A2. The Series A1 bonds will be rated, and we gave S&P the presentation last week. We heard back from them yesterday. We got an A rating with a stable outlook, and we're expecting a draft report today to review and to provide comments. This table just represents the 2 different series of bonds. The CFDs in highlighted in blue represent the Series A1 bonds. Then the last CFD represents the Series A2 bonds. For the first 23 years, the bonds are supported by both series, and then the last few years, they're just represented by the Series A2 bonds. All of the criteria meets the district's guidelines. A couple quick highlights: the value to lean ratio, very healthy, almost 20-1, generating a lot of savings, which I'll go over in the next slide. Delinquency levels are very low, under 1%. Effective tax rate is still under 2%, and the number of lots over 4,100. Prior reserve balances will be used towards the funding, and then a new reserve will be set up at the authority level. Projected par amount, $26.1 million. Bond proceeds, just over $30 million, and we're expecting true interest costs of 2.60%. This is the savings table we put together showing the number of parcels. These are the individually owned homes, 4,123 property owners. On a net present value savings basis, the estimated savings is just over $4 million. And the second column to the right is what I'm very excited for. As you could see, each of the developments and the property owners in those developments have average savings represented in this table. And almost 200 property owners will save over $300 on an annual basis beginning with the next year's tax bill. Although I'm the one that has the opportunity to bring this forward, it was not a one-man operation. We have a very committed team that has worked very hard on it. Many of the team members have joined us on the call, and just wanted to express thanks to them and also acknowledge the hard work that they've put in. As I mentioned, we went through the ratings last week. Today we're presenting it to the board for board approval. In a few minutes, we'll ask for the authority's approval, post the POS tomorrow, and then depending on market conditions, we expect to price next week, and the financing will close a couple weeks later. With that, the recommendation for the Eastern Board is to adopt the proposed resolution for the issuance of the CFDs for each CFD bonds. And then approve the related documents, the indentures, the purchase agreements, the escrow agreements, and then authorize the president and secretary of each CFD to complete and execute the transaction. Director Pauly, I don't think I made the 7 minutes, but hopefully it wasn't too far off there.
You were close. I'm going to take your last 30 seconds and ask one question I think we discussed in the admin committee. Have we found a way yet to contact the homeowners and let them know that we are going to be saving them money?
Yes, we did. Okay. We are going to reach out to them with a letter to explain their savings. We're going to do it after we price the bonds. That way we don't have to estimate a number.
I always want your hard work to be noticed by those that are benefiting from it. So, any other questions for Thomas on this item?
I had a question. I guess... Why is it that there's going to be a approval by Eastern and then an approval by the Western Riverside?
So the authority is the issuer of the bonds. Eastern has to approve the purchase agreement to essentially pay off those bonds that the CFDs that Eastern created, and then.
Oh, I get it. I get it. Okay, I got it. You answer the question.
Okay.
All right.
With that, I'll look for a
motion.
I'll
make that motion.
I'll second it.
It's been moved and seconded. Make it a roll call, please.
Director Pauly?
Aye.
Director Corona?
Aye.
Director Slauson?
Aye.
Director Armstrong?
Aye.
Director Record?
Aye.
The motion passes 5-0. With that, we will take a few-minute break, and we will resume. I'm going to turn the gavel over to Director Corona.
You don't need to give me a gavel.
So we'll need to start in 6 minutes.
In 6 minutes. We'll take a 6-minute break.
Thank you.
And in the right areas.
Different. It's a huge drainage area, but it just doesn't rain much. Mm-hmm. That's correct.
All right. Why don't we go ahead and get started? Bill and Bill, are you both on the line?
Bill Plummer is.
How about Bill Wilson? Well, we'll go ahead and get started, I guess. All right. Why don't we get started with a call to order public comments. If any member of the public wishing to speak, please unmute by calling star 6. And if you're having any trouble hearing the presenters, please speak up. Okay, so it's been a while since we had one of these meetings, so we need to have an election of the officers. So, Section 3.01 of the Joint Exercises of Powers Agreement for the Western Riverside Water and Wastewater Financing Authority requires that we hold an election of officers. Nominations will be accepted for the chair and vice chair of the board, which requires that one person from Eastern Municipal Water District and one person from Rancho California Water District serve in these capacities. We will begin with a nomination of the chair and follow with a nomination of vice chair. Nominations are open for the office of chair and vice chair of the Western Riverside Water and Wastewater Financing Authority. And with that, I'm going to start off by nominating Dave Slauson as chair of the Western Riverside Water and Wastewater Financing Authority. Okay. Dave Slauson has been nominated for the office of chair. Is there a motion and a second to close the nomination and cast a vote for Director Slauson to serve as a chair?
William Plummer will make that motion.
Is there a second?
Second.
Okay. Motion made by Bill Plummer and second by Dave Slauson. Could I have a roll call, please?
Director Corona?
Yes.
Director Slauson?
Yes.
Director Wilson?
Yes.
Director Plummer?
Yes.
Okay, I hereby recognize the vote of Dave Slauson for director to serve as the chair.
All right. Nominations are open for the office of vice chair of the Western Riverside Water and Wastewater Financing Authority. Is there a nomination?
I nominate Bill Plummer.
I second it. Bill Plummer has been nominated for the office of vice chair. Is there a motion and a second to close the nominations and cast a vote for Director Plummer to serve as vice chair?
So moved.
I'll second it. Could we please have a roll call vote?
Director Corona?
Aye.
Director Slauson?
Aye.
Director Wilson?
Aye.
Director Plummer?
Aye.
Thank you. I hereby recognize a vote of 4-0 for Director Plummer to serve as vice chair. Before us, we'll go on to item 3, approval of minutes. We have the regular minutes from March 15, 2017.
I move approval of the minutes.
I'll second it.
Director Corona?
Aye.
Director Slauson?
Aye.
Director Plummer?
Aye.
Director Wilson?
Aye.
Motion carries 4-0. Our first only action item today is item 4. Good morning.
Good morning. Good morning, Director Plummer, Director Wilson, and I think I heard Rick on the phone as well. Happy to be here before the authority board to present this item. It has to do with a pooled refunding option or opportunity we have to refund a series of bonds issued by Eastern CFDs. Quick background, yields continue to trend near historic lows, and the opportunity I just mentioned affects over 4,100 property owners in EMWD service area and will generate savings on their property tax bills. Moving on to slide three, just a quick map I put together to show the CFDs in relation to where they're located. As you can see, they're located throughout Eastern Service Area. In 2004, Eastern and Rancho entered into a JPA to form the Western Riverside Water and Wastewater Financing Authority. And it was formed for the financing of CFD public capital improvements. And as we just heard, the election was conducted. The authority board is represented by two members of Eastern and two members of Rancho. Since the formation, the authority has issued 10 series of bonds, both new issue and refunding bonds, the last of which being in 2017. The 2016A bonds were a pooled refunding. It was the last pooled refunding we did, and we were able to save several thousand property owners on their tax bills as well. The district plans to utilize the authority for the issuance of these refunding bonds. The series of bonds will be broken out into two series, Series A1 and A2. The Series A1 bonds will be rated. And Directors Plummer and Wilson, we spoke last week that we were going to give S&P the ratings presentation. We did so, and we heard back from them yesterday. And the bonds are expected to be rated A rating with a stable outlook. We received a draft report today, and we'll provide comments before an official report is issued. Moving on to slide six is a table we put together just to represent the two different series of bonds. In blue, the CFDs represent the bonds for the Series A1 bonds, and then the last CFD in gray represents the Series A2 bonds. The proposed refunding meets all of the district's guidelines and the district's debt policy. Value-to-lien ratio, very healthy, almost 20-1. Generating a considerable amount of savings of 14%. Delinquency levels are under 1%, and the effective tax rate still be under the district's requirement of 2%. Prior reserve balances on hand will be used towards the financing, and then new reserve fund will be set up at the authority level and will be paid proportionately by each of the underlying CFDs. Projected par amount of this issue is $26.1 million, generating just over $30 million in bond proceeds, and we're expecting a true interest cost of 2.60%. Moving on to slide eight is a savings table we put together. Just want to highlight a couple things on here. The number of property owners is 4,123, and it's estimated to generate just over $4 million savings on a NPV basis. The average annual savings be to the tune of $325,000 per year in aggregate, and the amount of savings per parcel ranges between $34 and $371. Almost 200 property owners will save more than $300 on their property tax bills, and we're too late for this year's property taxes, being that these bonds won't be called until March, but we will get this on the property tax bills for the next fiscal year. And we will be reaching out to all of the property owners with direct mail letters informing them of their savings, and then we'll also work with Eastern's governmental affairs team to put together a newsletter to post online. We have a diligent team that's worked very hard on this, and a few months ago the opportunity came up, and we've been all very excited. This is one of my favorite projects I've worked on at Eastern, and delivering a considerable amount of savings given COVID-19 and the times that we've been living in 2020. Just want to highlight the team. Our Eastern's Bond and Disclosure Counsel, Stradling, our great municipal advisor at Fieldman. We have a special tax consultant at Webb Municipal Finance, and our underwriters team, including Stiefel and Piper Sandler. Many of the members have joined us on the call today, and if there's any questions for any of them, I'm sure they'd be happy to chime in. Earlier today, we got board approval from the Eastern Board, and today we're seeking the authority approval. We'll be posting the POS tomorrow. We expect to price the bonds next week, dependent on market conditions, and then the financing will close on or near February 11th, ahead of the call date of March 1st. The recommendation for the authority board is to adopt the proposed resolution authorizing the issuance of the bonds in a principal amount not to exceed $30.5 million, approve the legal documents, including the indenture of trust, the POS, purchase agreements, and the escrow agreement, continuing disclosures, and then authorize the chair and vice chair of the board to complete and execute the transaction. With that, I'd be happy to answer any questions from the authority board, including Directors Plummer and Wilson.
Are there any questions, or if not, a motion?
I'd move staff's recommendation.
Is there a second?
I will second.
That sounded like Plummer. Was that you? Was that Plummer?
William Plummer.
Oh. Okay. All right, it's moved and seconded. Could we please have a roll call?
Director Corona?
Aye.
Director Slauson?
Aye.
Director Wilson?
Aye.
Director Plummer?
Aye.
Motion carries 4-0. And that concludes our meeting. I will adjourn this meeting to our next regular meeting on Wednesday, January 19th, 2022. Meeting's adjourned.
Thank you.
Thank you, Directors Plummer and Wilson.
Very good.
That's it. Piece of cake.
Not too hard. All right, thank you, gentlemen.
And I've been advised
we
need to wait about two or three minutes to switch back over to the Eastern meeting for technical reasons. So we will resume our 2 or 3 minute break.
Thank you.
All right. I understand we can go back to the Eastern Municipal Water District Board of Directors meetings for our January 20th. We are going to switch the agenda over a little since we do have a guest here to speak and be part of the presentation. We're going to take informational item B, which is the Santa Ana River Watershed Weather Modification Study. Good morning.
Good morning, President Pauly and members of the board. I guess I can move this down instead of standing on my tiptoes. It's my pleasure this morning to introduce Mark Norton. Mm-hmm. Mark is the Water Resources and Planning Manager at the Santa Ana Watershed Project Authority. SAPA has been exploring the utilization of weather modification or cloud seeding as a way to enhance water supply. And this morning, Mark will be providing an overview of the weather modification or cloud seeding process, as well as what SAPA has been undertaking in this arena so far. With that, I'd like to turn it over to Mark.
All right. Thank you for joining us this morning.
My pleasure. Thank you, President Pauly, members mm-hmm. of the board. Appreciate the opportunity to be with you this morning to talk about a rather unique program. It's actually a program that's been practiced and utilized throughout the western states for a number of decades. So I'd like to give you some background information, get new information perhaps to you about this process. It is still very much a study. It is not something that we're implementing at this stage. I'll give you a background about this, and the next few slides you'll actually see look familiar to you because they're actually Metropolitan Water District slides. There's an individual there by the name of Tom Ryan, and he's a full-time staff who actually provides support to Metropolitan on cloud seeding programs. So yeah, I'm borrowing his slides. He made this presentation to the SAPA Commission, as Director Slauson might remember. And so we'll jump right into that. First of all, I think some important to recognize that our natural atmosphere actually includes a lot of things. It's just simply not clear air. There's dust, ash, various particulates,
also known as pollution nuclei. This is important to recognize because what we're introducing is a substance called silver iodide under a cloud seeding format. This promotes basically rainfall and snowpack. In other areas, it's also been used for hail suppression and fog dispersal. Silver iodide is actually a natural substance. It is something that is introduced either through ground flares or generators or by aerial distribution of the silver iodide. It's introduced into the atmosphere, into clouds, under supercooled liquid water conditions. When the timing is right and the temperatures are right, it actually flows into the clouds and actually generates snowfall. Potentially could increase precipitation about 10%. Generally, the range is about 5 to 15%. It's important to recognize that this is not an answer to the drought. This is something that will enhance or augment an existing water portfolio. A little background about weather modification or cloud seeding. Back in the 1940s is when it really started in the U.S. At the time, there was a lot of overselling. People thought, well, this is sort of voodoo science, isn't it? A lot of misconceptions existed. But since that time, there's been a lot of forecasting, measurement, computing, and seeding methods have really improved. Here's a diagram of basically a conceptual model of how cloud seeding works. This is an example where the silver iodide is released by the ground-based stations using a propane flame. Basically, a small ash-like substance is then brought up into the clouds just by the wind action. There's no shooting of flares. There's no cannon of material that's brought into the clouds. It's simply brought up by the wind action. And the locations are very important that they make sure that they have that wind action in order to be able to introduce it to the clouds. The silver iodide basically is the start of a snow crystal. You have to have some type of nucleus. Oftentimes it's a dust particle. But in this case, silver iodide has been found to be very effective at the temperatures we're looking at to promote that moisture condition in the snowfall. Once it gets heavy enough, it drops down as an ice crystal or snow. This is, I think, probably one of the most remarkable things, I think, for many people who are not aware, is that there are over 150 programs in 40 countries and 11 states who utilizes these types of programs. Ski areas, power utilities, insurance companies, water resource agencies, conservation irrigation districts, as well as research institutes are continuing to explore these methods. The costs, which is really also quite remarkable, $4 to $40 per acre foot. Try to compare that to imported water costs of $700 to $800 per acre foot. It is a pretty good bargain. North American projects, you can see a map here of the western states. All the programs that are shown in blue are ongoing programs. You'll see the programs particularly supported by Metropolitan Watershed. There's about 12 to 15 programs in California and also in the lower Colorado River Basin. There's also additional warm season programs in Texas and Kansas and North Dakota. Common question I get, and this was actually a question that was one of the first questions I received from a hydrologist from the Forest Service. He was also a little bit unfamiliar with cloud seeding. He suggested, well, when you're doing this, aren't you just taking water that would have been going off to an adjacent watershed? Aren't you, like, pulling water away from others? Actually, no. This type of program actually simply adds precipitation and snowfall that would otherwise not be available. This is based on long-term research of over 44 studies, which have consistently showed that there's no precipitation decreases to adjoining watersheds. In fact, in some cases, because of downwind effects, it actually could increase the snowfall. Another question I've received, I've done a number of presentations of this nature to other boards. Question arises, okay, well, you're introducing some type of substance here. Couldn't it be a contaminant? It's important to recognize that silver iodide is non-soluble or biologically available. 50 years of studies looking at the physical, biological, aquatic, soil, and vegetation impacts have shown no or indiscernible effects. And also, there's actually potential benefit for more increased runoff, which it is an environmental benefit. Strong studies have shown that this is credible. There's been newer assessment methods. The regulations have improved. Basically, there is an overall benefit to this type of program. Health impacts. The amount of silver iodide that is introduced is below the natural background. Give you some comparisons. They found no effects of this in 50 years. The level of silver on silver iodide is less than what you'd be exposed to if you had tooth fillings, as I do in my mouth still. Iodine also is on levels up on far below even the salt levels in food. I'll give you an example of the regulations. EPA has indicated that their drinking water quality limit for silver iodide is 0.1 milligrams per liter. U.S. Public Health Service, a little bit more tight, 0.5 micrograms per liter. The concentration of the seeded rainfall is about 0.1 micrograms per liter, which is 1,000 times lower than the standards. So that's a very strong statement that we are a much lower concentration. Concerns also sometimes arise about the increased snow load. Basically, you're increasing snowpack. What about avalanches or snow removal impacts, flooding potential? In all programs of this nature, they have a suspension criteria. They want to make sure that we're not impeding or impacting negatively any types of operations up in the mountains there. So if there's risk of avalanches, they would simply turn off those stations. Snow removal, simpler, basically is on par with other snow removal efforts. Flooding potential, we've had throughout our process of doing this feasibility study, we invited representatives from flood control districts. We actually had Jason Yulee from Riverside County Flood Control District in $10 meetings. And he was concerned about some of the areas where there might be some potential flooding if there was, because he knows that there's some inadequate stormwater infrastructure that exists. And with that, so the consultant looked at the stations, and there were some stations that he originally proposed, and we took off the list simply to avoid any type of situation that might arise because of flooding. The economic benefits basically outweigh the negatives. Licensing and permitting. The state has permits and requirements that have to be followed. Operators have to be licensed. We need to make sure that they're following protocol. Permits are required by the state of California. There's required record keeping and annual reporting. In addition, liability as insurance is required of all the operators. Through all these many decades that this has been in place, there's been very few legal challenges and no successful legal judgments against any type of cloud seeding in the U.S. We follow the American Society of Civil Engineers standards. They have established protocol for and guidelines for cloud seeding, and this is required for all programs. In California, there's 12 to 15, as you show by the map here, programs that are ongoing. In fact, there's one that's not even shown on here that's just started about 2 years ago, and that's for the San Luis Obispo area. This type of technology is actually part of the many water resource strategies that are in the California Water Plan. So I think that's a very strong statement that the state embraces this and supports this. Oops. Let me go back. There we go. One question that often comes up is, what about a situation where you have some cloud seeding, and how do you know it really had that impact? You know, maybe it just had a big storm, and it just happened to be the right conditions. Well, they've done now extensive research. This was a very long-term, 10-year, $15 million study done in Wyoming. It's a randomized crossover experiment, included the National Atmospheric Research Center. Radiometers, snow chemistry, high-resolution precipitation gauges were used to ensure that they could really measure this. The estimate of the seeding impact basically was 10 to 15% increase on the average. The statistical, physical, and modeling analysis shows that cloud seeding is a viable technology. Sometimes people will go on the internet and search and they'll say, well, you know, I found a study that said it's still questionable. A lot of those studies are about 15 years old now. We're now gone to a stage where it's much more of an accepted practice. Studies demonstrate that in the wintertime, precipitation could be taken advantage of so you actually have seedable storms. We've actually looked at the Santa River watershed and looked at the past storm events to see those opportunities that could indicate cloud seeding opportunities. So they're there, and we want to take advantage of them if we can. The advances since the 1940s, I think, has addressed a lot of the misconceptions. 5 to 15% is the increase that we can expect on the average. Cost-effective, no negative downwind effects or health environmental effects. But it's still a process of education. I've been asked to come out to various elected boards to simply share this information. This is something that that also Tom Ryan is doing for us from Metropolitan Water District to keep people informed and to answer any questions that people have about such a program. Tom came out to the SAPA Commission on June 4th of 2019. This was actually a request by our commission. One of our commissioners suggested that we look into this. And so we first reached out to him. Metropolitan Water District certainly embraces this type of program and helps fund it. We asked our member agency general managers what they thought, and they felt like it looks like the science is there. Let's take a look and do a feasibility study to evaluate that. They funded this, and they also thought maybe the next round of funding for the Integrated Regional Water Management Program might be an opportunity to help pay for 50% of this if we present this as a regional watershed-wide project. So we'll be exploring that as a potential opportunity. So at this stage, we did a presentation to the SAPA Commission, and two consultants through a request for proposals were submitted proposals, and the one that was selected was the North American Weather Consultants. The proposal was reviewed by a team of a technical staff, and North American Weather Consultants conducted the study, about a $75,000 effort. The seeding methods and design, basically there's two main types of ground-based seeding methods. The first is called a cloud nuclei generator. This is basically a real simple device. It uses a propane container that provides the gas that ignites the silver iodide and releases it like a piece of ash into the wind, and it flies up into to the mountains. That's inexpensive and fairly easy to operate. This consultant also has another system called the AHOGS, or Automated High Output Ground Seeding Systems. They found these to be very effective along the coastline areas where you have much more of what they call a convective storm conditions, turbulence that brings up rapidly and more effectively into those coastal mountain ranges. These are the ground-based seeding locations that were originally proposed by the consultant. We then met with a lot of technical staff and got their feedback and have looked at potentially revising those. Also mentioned aerial seeding was also looked at. This is, I think, a process that is actually much more efficient in that it releases the silver iodide directly in the clouds as opposed to counting on the wind to bring it back into atmosphere or into the mountain ranges. The challenge with this is a little bit more expensive to operate and have a pilot on call to jump in the plane and get out into the clouds at the time the storm might be an opportunity to seed. And the other challenge is that we have a lot of air traffic within our watershed. The Ontario Airport has many fly-ins and fly-outs in right very foot of the mountain ranges that we're looking at. There is one area that the consultant found that along the San Bernardino Mountains that might work pretty well. The consultant, North American Weather Consultants, did detailed projection predictability models and looked at scenarios. This sort of shows you the extent of the flow of the ash, the silver iodide as it flows into the mountain ranges. We really want to hit basically those areas that are of higher elevation, roughly about 2,000 feet and higher, to promote that snowfall. Productivity increases. Under natural stream flow events, this is the amount of flow that we could potentially see from the major mountain ranges surrounding the Santa Ana River watershed. Looking at it now, a table of the potential increases, direct your attention to the far right particularly, you can see an increase roughly of about, just by using ground-based systems, of about 8%, roughly about 8,200 acre-feet. If we add on the aerial support of actual aerial seeding, That would add some additional increase in flow, increasing it to a percent increase roughly of about 11% on the average, roughly 11,600 or so acre feet of additional flow. So this was the original ground seeding sites. The yellow pins reflect the AHOGs, and the red bullseye squares reflect the cloud nucleating generators. We looked at some of these, and some of these were taken off based on the modeling, based on the input and feedback we got from the technical staff. For example, item number 16, which is really in the heart of Eastern's area, there was concerns raised by our representative from Riverside County Flood Control District about some of those areas in Romoland, homeland, that may not have the stormwater infrastructure for even moderate storms. So there were some concerns there. So some of those were taken off. So the numbers that I had shown you previously as far as the estimates are based on this layout. You see, again, the yellow two stations in the Orange County area, and those surrounding the San Gabriel, San Bernardino, and San Jacinto mountains. Back to cost effectiveness, potential cost, if we look at both ground and aerial seeding, about $400,000 a year. Cost per acre foot, about $36 per acre foot. Benefit to cost ratio, about 7-1. If we just looked at ground-based systems, it would cut the cost in about half. Again, it gives you an idea of how expensive sometimes the aerial seeding can be. The cost would be about $25 per acre foot, benefit cost ratio to 10-1. So where are we at now, now that we've concluded this feasibility study? We are conducting briefings to various governing boards, again, to answer questions, make sure that we are addressing their concerns. I know from the advisory or the committee, there was a question and concern about, well, what if you have one of these seeding events and it ruins my crops when I'm trying to harvest at the perfect time during the summer months? Again, you can turn this program on and off as needed. There might even be some areas that we might have a burn area. For example, you don't want to promote rainfall that might bring down sediment and such and impact the recharge basin areas. So you can actually turn off that system, one system, until that revegetation comes back. We brought this up a commission, and then at that time we were adjusting to the fact that our general manager is retiring, Rich Haller. He is going to be leaving us at the end of the month, and so they wanted to make sure that the new general manager who will be coming on board is briefed about this and has his recommendations to the SAPA Commission. If we do move into this next fiscal year, we'll be looking at the specific locations of where we want to place those ground-based seeding units and access to it, and also, of course, as necessary, under the state requirements to conduct CEQA and all the permits. This would take 6 to 12 months. If we were to start this program, it would be potentially starting in the fiscal year 22-23 year. Again, we're looking potentially at a pilot 3-year program, pan out to see if it works out, and also apply for potentially some state funds to offset the costs even more than what we've shown you here. So with that, that concludes my last slide, and I'd be happy to answer any final questions.
I had a question.
Sure.
So SAPA would be the main player in this. They would be actual work. But, for example, if there was seeding in the eastern area, would Eastern then, would we get a bill for that? How would that kind of work, though?
Financing is still some work to be done to figure that out as far as who would actually be funding all this. Right now, the feasibility study was equally shared among the SAPA member agencies. If there are other partners, particular agencies that say, you know, I see some real benefit here, I want to pitch in, we can certainly look at much more of a broader funding partnership. I think there's some real value there. There's many agencies that have recharge basins and operate recharge basins that could potentially benefit far more than other agencies. So I think there's lots of room to look at that and look at how we might share the costs.
Excellent. So any other questions?
I had a question. So how do they know, this is a dumb question, okay, how do they know that it goes from 5 to 15%? Do they release the silver iodide and then they measure the amount of increased moisture that's in a cloud formation, or do they just say, well, it was going to rain an inch and it rained an inch and a quarter?
You know, I would have to rely on the technical experts and the scientific study that I shared with you, and as indicated, many studies that have been performed within the report itself. Here in California, there's been a number of agencies that have asked that same question: how do we know it really worked and is working? And there are processes by which you can evaluate that and take a look at what the natural conditions would be. Looking at storm events, there might be areas where you are able to evaluate it with and without the area that has been seeded. So I believe that the science is there, the technical expertise to prove that out, and based on these long-term 10-year studies, it was pretty conclusive that, in fact, the science shows that it is, in fact, working in that range. Now, I think there's always a caveat to that, and that is we don't know in any one rain event whether it, you know, you'll get enough of those seedable events. We're looking at past averages. We know that the climate is changing. We know that we'll have probably fewer storm events, higher intensity storms. Will there be the same number of seedable possibility storms that exist? Based on the best available information, we do believe that it does show some promise and is likely. Again, this is a program that has been implemented throughout the state and the lower Colorado River basins by very respected and water agencies that feel obviously that this has proved itself and is working. I imagine if an agency found that, you know, it's just simply not doing anything, they could turn it off. One agency that's interesting that chose to not even start their program was L.A. County. But the reason they chose not to start it after they had gone through the CEQA and had a program about to kick off was because of the extensive wildfires and burns that they had. And so they said, you know, let's hold off on starting this until that has a chance to recover. So I think to answer your question, it is something we can also confirm as part of a pilot effort is to really evaluate, did this program work over those 3 years? And if it does, it makes sense. It's still getting those percentages that were expected by this predictive model, then we could continue.
I could add, I think the SAPA Commission decided to proceed because the cost just to continue this study is very nominal, especially considering the potential benefit. So we felt it was important to continue at least the planning phase.
All right. Well, thank you very much. One of the more fascinating presentations we've had here in a while.
Well, so thank you. I really appreciate that.
Appreciate you coming. And
my pleasure.
Thank you.
Thank you, Mark.
Really see
you. Appreciate you coming. Good to see you.
With that, we will go back now to item 5D, which is to approve and authorize agreement with Plant and Moran PLLC for $192,000 for development service permitting and tracking assessment replacement phase one and appropriation of $192,000. Mr. Mawad, are you going to present this?
President Pauly, our Director of Development Services, Corey Wallace, is on the line, and he will be presenting this item.
Welcome, Corey.
Good morning, President Paul, members of the board, and a very warm welcome to Director Armstrong. I am pleased to present this item for the board's consideration today. First, I'll start with some background as well as the significance of staff's activity in development services, including some of the challenges with its existing business systems and processes.
You've been muted. To unmute yourself, press *6.
Contemplated consultant services, and we'll finish with the recommendation for approval to award a consulting services agreement. Looks like we're on slide 2, so that's where I'll go next. With the build-out of EMWD service area at approximately 38%, development activity continues to be brisk,
especially over the last decade, as development trends are forecasted to continue. New service connections and associated connection fee revenues from development are sizable and typically range between 4,000 to 5,000 new connections annually, with corresponding revenues of approximately $45 to $55 million. Development services activities are comprehensive, and they generally comprise a project's planning and entitlement activities, as well as the associated facilities design and construction activities, all of which culminate in new EMWD facilities and customer connections. All of these activities and workflows are supported by two legacy business systems. Next slide, please. These two legacy business systems are named Sport and CityView. Sport was originally developed approximately 20 years ago as a custom software application with in-house support. Currently, Sport is grossly obsolete and its support is extremely limited and is now dependent on a retired EMWD employee, which is a significant risk for the district. CityView was procured and developed approximately 10 years ago as a semi-custom software application, and its intent was to replace Sport. However, its first phase implementation was very arduous, and additional phases were never deployed. Currently, CityView support is also limited due to software and platform updates not being kept current. A few noteworthy shortcomings and risks include the lack of integration within the department and across the enterprise, which results in time inefficiencies as well as data duplication and inconsistencies. Also, these systems lack any built-in analytics and reporting, which require staff to extract the siloed data for manual manipulation and analysis. To reinforce the importance of the analytics, if we can't measure it, we can't improve it. Next slide, please. As I mentioned in my opening, the subject effort will be conducted concurrently with the ERP assessment. Development services business processes have several touch points across the enterprise, and this slide was recently presented and discussed at the December 16th board meeting as part of the staff's ERP update. The point of this slide is to depict how development services utilizes multiple siloed business systems to process a new project and related service requests. In this example, data is manually entered multiple times in each system, which is labor-intensive and prone to inconsistencies across the enterprise. In addition to productivity challenges, the siloed information hinders staff's ability to readily gather and analyze data. With lack of system integration and workflow automation, current workflows are heavily reliant on paper and email transmission, thus improving process efficiency is limited. Next slide. As with the district's ERP initiative, Development Services proposes to engage a third-party professional to provide comprehensive and uniquely focused needs assessment. This assessment will produce recommended changes in business processes and technology systems in order to achieve the noted objectives, all of which are interrelated, starting with integration and simplification and ending with an improved customer experience. Next slide. This effort will be segmented into several distinct phases. The subject request will authorize the phase one assessment with its findings and recommendations being presented to the board prior to advancement of the subsequent phases. I'd like to highlight that change management will be an integral part in all phases. Change management will provide a structured approach that will prepare, equip, and support individuals to adopt change in order to drive organizational success and outcomes. As part of phase one, the consultant will perform a change readiness assessment by engaging staff with pointed survey questions. Next slide. The consultant's phase one efforts will include a detailed process mapping depicting the as-is and the to-be process scenarios with subsequent workflow analyzation just to understand handoffs, dependencies, decisions, and responsibilities, and to identify inefficiencies and potential improvements. Additionally, the consultant's phase one efforts will analyze existing business systems and conduct a business systems need assessment. It will also evaluate and design an optimized organizational structure to support improved to-be business processes. They will also identify potential replacement business systems and develop the required implementation plan. Ultimately, findings and recommendations from this effort will be presented to the board. Next slide. even though this phase two isn't part of the request, I just wanted to give you, a highlight of what they would be doing next. As part of phase two, the consultant would define and document required business system requirements that would be included in the next RFP for system procurement and implementation. They will lead the system selection and contract negotiation efforts, including efforts to lead in the selection and negotiation for a system integrator. They will also develop an implementation plan to incorporate organizational change management, customer outreach and communications, and resource planning for system implementation and post-implementation periods. Next slide. The district received significant interest from its consulting services solicitation, with eight firms responding to the RFP. The eight proposals were thoroughly reviewed and scored by a proposal evaluation panel consisting of staff from development services, information systems, and field engineering. The highest weighted scoring criteria considered the qualifications and experience of the firm and the proposed team members, as well as their approach and understanding of the scope of services. Scoring criteria also considered other areas such as schedule, references, price and payment terms, etc. Next slide. I'm sorry, there was one other point I wanted to make on that previous slide. Can you go back? So of the top three scoring firms and their team members, we invited them for interviews, and the consensus scoring for that process concluded with Plant Moran having the highest score and also their recommendation for award of an agreement. Next slide. This matrix identifies the final scoring of the top three firms along with the respective pricing, which does reflect their proposed level of effort. Of the top three scoring proposals, Plant Moran had the highest cost and proposed level of effort. However, considering all eight proposals received, Plant Moran landed slightly above the pooled average for cost and level of effort. For reference, the range of pricing of all eight consultants range from a low of just over $50,000 to a high of about $231,000, with the average being about $136,000. So Plant Moran was slightly above the average, considering all eight firms that provided proposals. Next slide. Plant Moran's phase one evaluation is expected to take approximately 5 months and will run in parallel with the ERP evaluation. Staff expects to present the findings and recommendations from the phase one evaluation to the board in mid-2021. Next slide. With this, staff's requesting the board's recommendation to approve and authorize the execution of an agreement with Plant Moran in the amount of $192,000 and appropriation of the same amount. And with that, I'd be happy to answer any questions the board may have.
Any questions for Corey? Seeing none, I'll look for a motion and a second to approve the item.
I'll move approval.
Second.
Any questions?
There are no questions. It was moved by Director Slauson, seconded by Director Armstrong.
I don't have a question, but I'll move staff's recommendation.
Okay. Director Polly?
Aye.
Director Corona?
Aye.
Director Slauson?
Aye.
Director Armstrong?
Aye.
Director Record? Dr. Record?
You are no longer muted.
I don't either. Yeah, this is O'Neill. I don't hear anything either. I was waiting for a second.
Director Record, we have a 4-0, and we're waiting for your vote on it.
Okay, well, you guys, we couldn't hear you. None of us could hear you, but I vote aye.
Okay. The item passes 5-0. I want to take a brief moment to make sure we have Director Record connected correctly. Can you hear us, Director Record?
But can you hear me?
We can.
Yes.
Okay, we couldn't hear you for a little while there.
Okay.
Can you hear us now and hear President Pauly? Go ahead, President Pauly.
Yes.
Very good. I'm glad we're all connected. Let's move on now to item E, which to approve and authorize a second amendment to the cooperative agreement amended with Elsinore Valley Municipal Water District for the Upper Tesmoke Valley Salt and Nutrient Management Program and the appropriation of $500,000.
President Pauly, our Environmental Services Manager, Doug Edwards, will be presenting this item.
Very good. Thank you.
Right.
Mr. Edwards, please.
Good morning, President Pauly and members of the board. I'm going to be going over the cooperative agreement amendment for the Upper Temescal Salt and Nutrient Management Plan. Just a little quick, we're going to be a background of the agreements with Elsinore Valley Municipal Water District, and then the status of the Salt Nutrient Management Plan, and then the recommendations. Okay, here on the map, just kind of gives an idea of what, the area we're talking about. It's that more teal-green area on the southern portion there, just north of Lake Elsinore. This basin down here is where we discharge the water in the wintertime when we have excess recycled water. This basin here, just for reference, it's a very small basin. It's approximately 75,000 acre feet. In comparison, the upper San Jacinto Basin is 1 million acre feet. Because of this, there's a relatively quick turnover of this basin between 5 to 7 years, and the water quality is greatly impacted due to dry and wet seasons because of its small size. For a little bit more background here, EMWD has a National Pollution Discharge Elimination System permit. It allows us to discharge 52.5 million gallons per day for seasonal discharge with the total dissolved solids limit of 650 milligrams per liter. In comparison, Elsinore Valley Municipal Water District has an MPDS permit that allows them to discharge to Temescal Creek, but their limit is 700 milligrams per liter. The one issue we have here is both EMWD and Elsinore's TDS limits were not scientifically based on water quality at the time. It was more of a best professional management judgment when these two different permits were issued. And so this is part of our study, is to establish a more scientific background in the establishment of these permit limits. Part of the reason for us developing the Salt and Nutrient Management Plan is to make up for our exceedances in the discharge in the past. The Water Board has accepted that developing the Salt and Nutrient Management Plan, any exceedances are deemed mitigated, and so we can't assimilate any fines. Just a few for the history of our cooperative agreement with Elsinore. It started back in July of 2013, where EMWD authorized the agreement with Elsinore to do the initial study of the Salt Nutrient Management Plan. Again, in November of 2014, an amendment was made for an additional $67,000. Here, again, in April, the board approved an authorization of $102,000 for EMWD's portion of the ongoing study. And then again, 2018, there was another appropriation of $156,000. So this has been an ongoing study. There's multiple years that are required for sampling and such, and it's going to be quite a few in the future. So here's what the results from the study came out to be. With review of the available historical water quality and then the prior abundant water qualities and then the current, you can see it fluctuates quite a bit with the TDS, the nitrate levels, and that's with the turnover. It's such a small basin. The wet years, the water quality improves quite a bit. In the dry years, the TDS increases. Throughout the study, we were able to submit the salt nutrient management plan to the Water Board, which was approved in December 4th of just 2020. And that gave us the anti-degradation objective of 820 milligrams per liter for TDS and at 7.9 milligrams per liter for nitrate. EMWD's current discharge limit is 650 for TDS and 7.5 for nitrate. So we're going to be continuing with the study. We're going to be working to update the salt nutrient management plan. And this is the ongoing. So we submitted the plan. Now it's the actual process of doing the recommendations, continuing sampling, looking how rainfall impacts the water quality, conducting measurements of the rainfall, and working with the Water Board on meeting the obligations for the TDS. So that's where we're going to be continuing with our actions with the participate in the joint program with Elsinore. And we need to do triennial updates to what our findings. So we're going to be doing reports every 3 years showing how the TDS, the nitrates, have varied over that course of those 3 years and seeing if our recommendations are correct on the TDS with the modeling. And some of the management actions we're going to be looking for, like I just talked about, was the stormwater management program. So that's probably the biggest part of it, is trying to see what the impact is. They really don't have a good feeling of how much water is flowing down the creek. This is a very poorly studied basin in the past. There's not a lot of historical water quality information, and that's what the Water Board's looking for us to help out with, is looking to see how that all comes about. And also we'll be working with Elsinore Valley on doing a salt offset plan. Like I mentioned before, us doing the salt nutrient plan made up for our past TDS exceedances. Now we're looking to see if there's going to be any requirement for any mitigation efforts in the future. Here's a little breakdown of the costs. The total estimated cost for the 3 years of the study is going to be approximately $474,000, with approximate $26,000 contingency for an even number of $500,000. And that's Eastern's portion. The total project is close to $1 million. One footnote here is the third item down with the asterisk there for the sum of $270,000. That's for the installation of a monitoring station just for the Lee Lake bypass. Currently, there's no monitoring being done for water coming out of Lee Lake through their bypass. So there's no calculation of flow or water quality. And Elsinore Valley is working with the USGS on getting a grant for either complete funding or partial funding. So that could take off a big chunk of the chain, almost 25% of the cost of the study right there. So I know I went through this pretty quick, but if my recommendation here is you approve and authorize the Second Amendment for the cooperative agreement with Elsinore Valley for implementing the Upper Temescal Salt Nutrient Management Plan for plans for 2021 through 2023 with appropriation of $500,000.
President Pauly, if I can add, historically we've been challenged in meeting the permit requirements of 650 TDS for discharge when we do discharge. As Doug mentioned, the study findings are very favorable. They indicate an anti-dike result of 820 milligrams per liter for TDS. So we feel it's an important milestone in our long effort to change our permit requirements with the regional board. So we're very much pleased with the results of the study, and both us and Elsinore have an interest in modifying our respective permit limits. So this is an important step forward in us being able to achieve exactly that, which will provide us with significant operational flexibility.
So just for reference for the board, our last year's TDS average during the discharge was 686 milligrams per liter. So we'll be looking to go to the regional board to increase our limit to 700. And we're in that process right now.
And Elsinore's picking up the second half, the other
correct.
Part of the
it's yes. split 50-50.
That, yes, that's
just
right.
Straight down the middle.
And has that board approved that yet, Joe? Or?
That goes to their board on their next board in February.
Okay.
It went to the committee last week.
Okay. Director Ecker, do you have any questions on this?
None for me, thank you.
Any other board members with questions?
I would move approval.
Director Corona has moved the item. Do I have a second?
Second.
Director Armstrong has seconded the item. May I have a roll call vote, please?
Director Pauly?
Aye.
Dr. Corona?
Aye.
Dr. Slauson?
Aye.
Dr. Armstrong?
Aye.
Director Record?
Aye.
The item passes 5-0. We'll now move on to item F, which is to approve and authorize fee acquisitions of a portion of the assessor's parcel number 486-170-023-024-027 and an easement over assessor's parcel number 486-170-024 in the city of Moreno Valley. Mr. Ward.
Good morning, President Pauly, members of the board. I have the honor of presenting this item for the board's consideration. This is for property acquisition from the city of Moreno Valley in support of the Paris North contamination, groundwater contamination program. As you know, we were awarded our largest grant in our history, $44.5 million in support of a $90 million program. That program consists of seven extraction wells from North Moreno Valley down into the city of Paris. The area we're focusing on today is known as the Cactus Corridor, and immediately east of the March Air Reserve Base, we have the need for up to two extraction well sites. The purpose of the program is to prevent the migration of groundwater contaminations and remediate the groundwater areas of concern. The well siting criteria for a well of this type, it's required to be at least 1,000 feet from active remediation well sites. And as you know, with all of the potential contamination and remediation wells, monitoring wells within that area, that proves to be somewhat difficult. It also needs to be on a parcel half acre or larger to accommodate safe operations and maintenance. This aerial image shows the Cactus Corridor East area. I should note that below that circled area is a bedrock channel roughly 800 feet below ground surface. So not only do we need a large site, we need to make sure that we are directly above the contaminated water that we are hoping to remediate. The other point is that this aerial provides is you can see that it's all built out. This is a master planned and nearly fully developed area. So finding a parcel half acre in size is incredibly difficult. Finding a parcel without CC&Rs on it that would restrict the municipal well construction and operation is also incredibly difficult. However, we do have a great working relationship with the city of Moreno Valley. And about 18 months ago, we began negotiations with the city staff. We looked very closely at the city's, what they call their corporate yard. It's also their maintenance yard. It's roughly an 18-acre site at the intersection of Paris Boulevard and Santiago Avenue. We engaged with the city because we knew that there is actually, again, some motivation for them to transfer property to us and address a longstanding memorandum of understanding that they have with EMWD, and I'll get to that in a second. Well, the other thing that we considered was their master plan for their corporate yard. And just so you know, within this aerial image and this exhibit, the easement that we're proposing is in line with a proposed driveway that the city's master plan represents for the same parcel. So we are proposing to acquire a fee property site, roughly half acre in site, 24,000 square feet. It's been appraised at $43,200, and a shared easement for ingress, egress, also for the ability to construct our pipelines and power to our facility, roughly 12,000 square feet. It's been appraised at $21,000. I want to point out that the city has a stormwater channel and basin, and our driveway that we will be constructing ahead of the city will, in essence, cut that stormwater channel in half. We need to have at least a 25-foot driveway, and that is also expected to be a water quality treatment channel. And because of that, we felt it was reasonable to share some of the restoration costs of that stormwater channel. So I mentioned the Memorandum of Understanding. In 2011, the district and the San Bernardino Valley entered into this agreement. And this agreement recognized encroachments that were allowed at a historic water booster station owned by EMWD at the intersection of Nason and Dracia. In the 1990s, due to a very advanced growth peak, we saw road widening occur at that booster station. And recognizing that it was also driving EMWD to relocate that booster station, the city agreed that they would reimburse EMWD $2 million for some of those relocation costs. Since then, we've also noted some encroachments at our Paris and Ironwood booster station, specifically the widening of Paris Boulevard and the widening of Ironwood Boulevard. And in essence, it tucked our booster plant into a corner behind the curb. In fact, there wasn't even room for the sidewalk that you see here. And it became even more challenging to operate and maintain that facility. So in 2014, the city agreed to compensate EMWD $50,000 for that site if we were to dedicate that site to the city for its use. That site has been relocated about a mile south on what we call a state-of-the-art EMWD water booster station. And this particular site at the corner has been completely cleared, scraped, and all of our improvements have been removed. I should note that the city agrees to also indemnify EMWD for any potential risk on that property. That value that they agreed to compensate EMWD will be added to the outstanding balance of the MOU. The table on the right indicates the running balance or running total of this obligation to EMWD. Again, in 2011, the agreement read for the city to reimburse EMWD $2 million. That $2 million, it's my understanding, is to be collected and paid to EMWD from the development impact fee. Now, you'll note that there has been some deduction as of 2017, totaling $39,000. At one time, the city was allowing us to deduct permit fees and inspection fees from some of our capital projects. In my opinion, that proved even more costly to try to administer. In essence, the current credit balance owed EMWD is at $1.96 million. If we apply that credit for the city acquiring our Paris and Ironwood booster station site of $50,000, deduct the value of this fee property at $65,000, deduct the potential 50% share to reconstruct that stormwater treatment system of not to exceed $98,000. The obligation balance upon completion of that MOU would be $1.847 million. I should note that because that's an obligation that we're willing to deduct that value of, yet still funded by the grant, it's eligible for reimbursement by the grant, and that grant refunds the district 50% of its expenses. So we've already spoke to the grant analysts at State Water Resource Control Board, and they're willing to consider this as part of our either local match or grant reimbursement. So in essence, in summary, the recommendation is to approve and authorize the acquisition of that fee property in the easement in the amount of $65,059, and to authorize the general manager to execute purchase and sale agreement, the credit towards the Paris and Ironwood settlement, and the credit towards the Memorandum of Understanding, and appropriate additional $55,000 for in-house escrow title, surveying, and securing the site consultant and staff time. So with that, I'd be happy to take any questions that the board may have.
Just for clarification again, what the original $2 million debt, what was that? What project was that?
Nason and Dracia Booster. I think it was Harvest Valley High School, clear on the east end of the city. And what would happen is because they widened, I think it's Nason at Resnorth.
We ended up having no
We had no ingress egress. It was a booster plant constructed in the 60s, right on the corner of a two-lane road, and that two-lane road quickly became four lanes.
Yeah. They widened Nace into a major corridor.
Okay.
Any other questions? And our relocation of that was primarily because of safety, and it was an old design booster station. But literally, the road of the busy four-lane road was right up against the parcel, and you couldn't get trucks into the parcel.
Right. I think part of the deal, they gave us some land on
Cottonwood. Letterman.
Yeah.
Okay. Letterman and Cottonwood. That's our Letterman booster.
Okay. Yes. All right.
Yeah.
Any other questions?
No.
Would you like to make a motion, approval. Director Slauson?
I move approval.
Director Slauson moves approval.
I'll second.
Director Crona seconds. Would you please call the roll?
Director Pauly?
Aye.
Director Crona?
Aye.
Director Slauson?
Aye.
Director Armstrong?
Aye.
Director Record?
Aye.
The item passes 5-0. Thank you, Mr. Ward.
President Pauly,
yes.
The next item on the agenda is the 2021 Plan of Finance. Mm-hmm. It's an information item and will probably be fairly long and have some discussion. It's not an item of urgency, and I do want to note that we have two closed session items today that are going to be long, and I want to be very respectful of the board's time and schedule. So at the board's pleasure, we could have that item now, or we could put it on as an information item for our first meeting in February.
Does anybody on the board object to moving this item to the first meeting in February?
I do not object.
Are you okay with that, Director Record?
Absolutely.
Let's move that to the first item. We'll make that the first informational item at the first meeting in February.
Thank you very much.
With that, we'll go to item 7, which is to receive and file various reports. I'll look for a motion and a second on that.
I'll second it.
Director Armstrong, seconded by Director Slauson. May I have a roll call vote, please?
Director Pauly?
Aye.
Director Crona?
Aye.
Director Slauson?
Aye.
Director Armstrong?
Aye.
Director Record?
Aye.
Very good. That passes 5-0. I believe then, was it Nicole? Calendar review.
Good morning. Good morning, President Pauly, members of the board. I will keep this very brief. On page 2 of your review, we have the board's master calendar for the next 2 weeks. And rather than reading through these items, I'll just note a couple of changes for updates made this morning. Director Pauly's update meeting with the general manager that was scheduled for tomorrow has been moved to Wednesday, January 27th.
Correct. Thank you.
Thank you. And for Thursday, January 28th, for the quarterly Deferred Compensation Administrative Oversight Committee, I just wanted to note that the board members for that meeting are Director Pauly and Director Armstrong. That meeting will happen at 7:30 a.m. And the final change, on Monday, February 1st, for Director Armstrong's calendar, the Quail Valley Sub-Area 4 update meeting, the city has requested a time change for that. 3 p.m. does not work for them, so we're working on moving that to 7:30 a.m. if that works. On page 3 and 4 of your calendar review, the upcoming board and committee meetings for the next 3 months are shown, as well as the interagency meetings, and they're all on schedule. Are there any questions or changes to the calendar?
No.
Hearing none, that concludes my report. Thank you.
Thank you, Nicole.
Thank you very much, Nicole. With that, we'll go to a director's attendance reports. And if we could we start with you, Director Armstrong?
I attended the Mead Valley Municipal Advisory Council. Nothing really to report from that, but I did want to say I appreciate that we participate in these community groups and even these unincorporated and small areas and give attention to that. So I just appreciate that.
Thank you. Director Corona, the Rancho California Water District.
Yes, I attended the Rancho Water meeting last week. Not a lot of excitement. There was quite a long discussion about committee assignments, but that's all I have.
Very good. I had an outreach meeting with April on our public affairs group, in which we had a long discussion on future public affairs activities and especially some of our educational and things we can do out at our bird watching and continued talks with the Audubon Society. So that was very productive. I also attended University of California Riverside Inland Empire Economic Outlook. The main speaker was a local economist, Chris Thornburg, who gave a rather, I think, optimistic and surprisingly optimistic good report for the Inland Empire, even through Corona, especially about housing, continuing to build housing, which we actually know out here. So it seemed to be some strong economic good news for our local service area. And then I also attended the Southern California Water Coalition Executive Committee meeting last week. Nothing overly notable to report out of that. Director Record.
Thank you, President Pauly. MWD meetings, Finance and Insurance Committee agenda review with Met staff prior to committee meetings. And then standing committee and board meetings. You have a written report that's attached to the agenda. Two of the highlights are probably the approval of the brochure to send out to get applicants for replacement of General Manager Keitlinger and an update of Exhibit A or Appendix A that is used for bond financing. As far as EMWD, Joint Inland and Orange County Caucus review of the Met agenda with other agencies, which is always a good discussion. Starcup program discussion, Paul and I have been working with Seth Marabucci, president of MODOC, and one of their Met reps, and their general manager, Rob Hunter, to try to finalize the agreement, and it appears that we're very close. And then Eastern and Western joint presentation to Monday morning group. We will be having virtual meetings with Sacramento legislators and staff and agencies, and we always work out an agenda of important issues with Western and present it to the group to take on our behalf. And good presentation and very well received by the group.
Very good. Thank you so much, Director Slauson.
I attended the SOPA Special Commission meeting of January 6th, and wherein we went over candidates for the GM position and interviewed candidates, and another SOPA Commission meeting on January 12th, where we actually interviewed two remaining or several others. I attended the meeting with the general manager, Paul Jones, on January 14th. Went over, of course, all the current projects, all the updates. I also attended the Hispanic Chamber of Commerce meeting on the 15th. And Jackie Melendez, the deputy city manager for the city of Moreno Valley, gave a presentation as well as the school. And then Consuelo Arias gave a presentation on behalf of EMWD and did a great job. I attended the SOPA Commission meeting yesterday, and we selected Mr. Jeffrey Mosher, to be the new GM for SOPA. That's it.
Excellent. Thank you very much for that report. Brings us to item 9, which is directors' comments or future agenda items. Do any directors have any comments or an item that they want to add to the future agenda? See none. I'd just like to say another good meeting and good presentations by staff today. Brings us to item 10, which is closed session. I'd like to ask our council, I do know we need closed session, but if our council could outline our closed session.
Sure. Thank you, Mr. Chair. As identified as item 10, we have one closed session pursuant to Government Code Section 549.6.8 for property acquisition of APN 486160036. And we also have a closed session concerning public employment under Government Code Section 549.57.
Very good. With that, if we could ask staff to bring us over to the closed session.
We could just have a few minutes to switch
Absolutely.
Over to the other line.
Yes.
Thank you.
Okay. We will take those few minutes.
Very good. Thank you. Shayla, yes. will we be talking yeah. through these?
Yes.
Question, Mr. Legal Counsel, may I get a report out of closed session, please?
No, thank you, Mr. Chair. The board met pursuant to Government Code Section 54956.8 to discuss potential property acquisition, a portion of APN 486-160-036. The board received a report concerning this matter and gave instruction to staff. The board also met pursuant to Government Code Section 54957. To discuss public employment and the general manager recruitment update. The board received a report of this matter. No formal action was taken. That concludes my closed session report.
Very good. With that, we will stand adjourned until our next regular meeting, which is on Wednesday, February 3rd, 2021 at 9 a.m. Thank you, everyone.
Thank you, everyone. Randy, I will give
Thank
you a
you.
Call and brief you on that item.
Thank you.